It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, once again, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. And I have in the studio, on a glorious sunny day, Terry Snyder. Hi.
How are you doing, Mike? Beautiful day.
Right. And somewhere where the sun probably still shines as well, Zaz Hollander on the phone. Where are you calling from today?
Just Palmer Fishhook, not very far.
Okay, so then we're all in the sun. Well, let's start with you, Zaz, because you're back and you're writing, and we have a series of articles that you've been involved with. Some of them tell some stories of, well, where do you want to start? We have a gentleman who is still out there in the world being sought after.
Yeah. Yep, Mr. Church, a repeat remote cabin burglar and repeat escapee, walked away from the low-security Point McKenzie prison farm a few days ago and was spotted at a cabin in the Flat Lake area. And still, as far as I know, as of right now, it's 9:49 on Friday morning, has not been arrested.
So are they?
Some people in the Big Lake area are kind of a bit nervous about that.
I am. I have a house there. are they doing flyovers? Are they? It's kind of a hard time to access a lot of parts of the lake now.
Yeah, I don't. I have to check in with the troopers. I've been busy on another story.
Okay. So that's something for listeners who, when they hear this later today, might pay attention to. You have another story where someone has been arrested for a heinous crime. What's that all about?
The 66-year-old foster care father who was arrested on sexually abusing a minor counts of the children in his care. He also, 20 years ago, starting 20 years ago or so, to teach in the Mat-Su School District.
Wow. Okay. Implications of all sorts from that. Okay. But that won't be going to trial for some time.
Yeah, that's just starting in the process.
Okay. I also noted that you had something about Denali. Could you care to summarize that?
Yeah, there's a new weather stations on Denali at a kind of an altitude that we haven't seen real-time online weather forecasting all the way up to 14,200 feet. High camp on Kahiltna. And this were three separate stations, one at base camp at 7,000-ish feet, another at Kahiltna Pass at 10,200, I think, and then at the camp on Kahiltna at 14. And so this will both help climbers and rangers and aviators get an immediate look at the weather conditions on a mountain that has constantly changing weather, but will also allow, because of a device that's on the towers, will allow glacier research to continue at a higher level and will allow a scientific team to get a much better look at the kind of mass balance on the Kahiltna, how much it's gaining or losing every year, because the kind of snowpack on the mountain, it's different. It's most glaciers at sea level, certainly you can measure at the beginning of summer and the end to see how much they melt, whereas on Denali, certainly at some places, there is more snow in the summer than in the winter. So this device, which will beam kind of acoustic signals down to the snow and back, will give them, the glaciologists, a chance to get a more accurate snapshot as to how the glacier is, how stable it is, whether it's actually gaining some more snow in the summer, and also whether in some places on the mountain, if there's snow level, there's actually more snow falling than there had been historically.
Did you get some idea of how this weather station will be powered?
It has battery powers and batteries, but it's a solar power. So they did have some issues with batteries, kind of lower battery levels at one station in particular. And so they didn't get a constant reading from that one.
Well, that had to be a very difficult placement, and I think it describes why it's taken so long to do it, both the weather conditions, et cetera, to be able to sustain something at that elevation and those mountain conditions.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah. That's okay. Exciting that they'll have that data, though.
Is there a webcam?
there is a website you can go to for the forecast.
For the forecast.
Webcam with survivor in one.
Right. That would be the next level, I think, when that happened.
Right.
Well, let's shift focus a little bit because As we were doing this right now, the Senate Finance, House Finance, the House and Senate and the Alaska State Legislature are all trying to come up with the focus on a number. I've decided to look at it that way. And the number is the number associated with the permanent fund dividend check. And the last that I saw, the Senate had one number, the House had another number. They were relatively close. They were both north of $1,000, maybe a few hundred dollars apart. And the somewhat different than the governor's proposal of, say, $3,000. And that seems to be the major question. And I think it was Senator Von Imhoff who pointed out recently that the legislature and the government does not have a budget problem, in the sense of a deficit problem. What they have is a priority problem. And I'm beginning to pick up from individual representatives and senators that there's a tendency to agree with that. There is enough money if you look at one way or another of placing it either in the form of a dividend check or to provide government services. I think David Teal recently, once again, took both the short and long view. And I think more and more the legislature is coming around to say, even if something looks good at this moment, if you take the time to do the analysis and roll this out into the future, 5-10 years, if you don't want to come back and once again be debating this and play with it, you can see where it's all going. And in part, it involves things like inflation. And inflation is almost like the air we breathe. Sometimes we don't notice it, but it does have an effect when it's there. So, Terry, you've been watching a bit of this.
Oh, way too much. Way too much. The presentations have been, I just think the conversation at the table this year, particularly with Senate Finance, I was a little hesitant when they added a number of people to the table, how that would shake out. But I think it really has sort of added to the conversation and gotten a better overall view from Alaskans, more focused on a lot of different areas. But, you know, there is a lot of historical evidence that's coming up that I haven't seen before. I know there's a lot of talk about the overspending and cuts. But it was interesting to see David Teal's presentations showing that, you know, when the legislators have had to monitor themselves in spending, they've been able to do that. And there's data that shows that. And so there's a lot of talk about the governor wants a constitutional amendment baked in so that spending can't continue. But they have been in the past able to take their foot off the gas when they want to. But just having the historical presence of Senator Stedman, who's been there probably the longest sitting at the table, I'm not sure, but close to, and knowing that he's very troubled by the fact that the lack of capital budget and how that affects local communities, that keeps that engine running. And if you just put enough money in there to match federal spending, that doesn't really grow the sustain the economy. So I just think it's a much more in-depth conversation. And frankly, from my viewpoint, I'm just really glad people are paying attention a little bit more. They're still talking about talking points, and they're still listening to the echo chambers to some degree. But I just see a lot more people engaged in where people didn't even really give much thought to the budget before. So to me, that's significantly different than other sessions.
Now, we sometimes find some value by looking at polling. Mm. And I know that the governor has done another series of visitations around the state talking about his particular proposal. But my sense is that the polling suggests that he's not gaining traction in terms of finding more popularity for what he's saying. And at the present time, that seems to be in the back of many people's minds. Next year, and it's been a very specifically spoken to, is an election year. And so people are watching. They're now past 100 days in session. In 20 days, they will have to either go into a special session or be done. And they may also be called back into special session by the governor, who has suggested that in addition to the permanent fund dividend check, a very significant set of bills that he has been proposing deal with criminal justice. And I had the opportunity to watch House Minority Press availability yesterday, and I noted that there was, at least the minority, from the minority's point of view, the idea of essentially repealing the Senate Bill 91, which was the revision to the criminal justice system that had taken a long time, a lot of discussion, was what was desired, and that the bills that were before the House that were partially moving in that direction were not sufficient. So what it seems to be is that there are people who are saying there have been improvements. There have been improvements to the Senate Bill 91 situation, which people agreed needed to be adjusted. And repealing it with and going back to where we were, particularly with a focus on harsh penalties and a little focus on what happens when a person comes out of prison, is not the way to go. But the governor seems to be adamant, and there's even been the discussion about how much it will cost. $1 million, for example, to do a special session that's focused on criminal justice reform.
Yeah.
The other aspect that seems to be very important to the governor are the three constitutional amendments. There seems to be no easy way to have that happen this session, where the legislature would be moving that forward. I'm thinking that perhaps the governor might be willing to continue on if there were some indications that the legislature would do that. Terry, any comment?
Well, that's going to be a ballot question for next year anyway, so there is a little wiggle room with that. I think at this point he seems more focused on the crime bills getting passed, and there are some sitting for Senate Finance to take attention to, but they're looking to see what the bottom line is and how you finance things. So they're a little impasse, but I feel fairly confident they're going to finish in the next 20 days. They've taken all the public testimony on the budget that they're supposed to take at this point, I think. So they're just having to pass it out of committee and get into their negotiations between the two bodies. But I think there's a lot of huffing and puffing about those constitutional amendments. I think that the Senate has made it fairly clear, the Senate Finance, that they want to put in, they're more interested in maybe putting in some type of bill that precludes that so that we can keep from going that route with the Constitution. There doesn't seem to be a lot of appetite, but there's still another year that could play out. So I don't know if that's the deal breaker for the session that I see, but it's hard to say. The governor can tack anything he wants really on to a special session and bring them back. They can bring themselves back for special session. And we still have to figure out what the vetoes are and whether there's political will to overturn any of those vetoes. So there's a lot to be played out here.
Okay. Today, I also watched, prior to this session here with Valley Edition, I noticed John Harris, who is still a lobbyist for the borough, that was sitting in the audience awaiting the Senate Finance Committee discussion. So he's attuned to things because, and that provides a segue to the local area. Terry, I know that you've been attending the assembly meetings, and you're also aware of what's coming up. Maybe briefly, what's the assembly going to be doing with the budget in the next 2 weeks or so?
So next week starts the public comment period for their budget, which they will no doubt pass before the legislature does their final budget. And they, I think Tuesday starts their first hearing in the Wasilla area, and then they come back over to Palmer for a hearing, and then they also go on to in the Willow area to start public hearings. And then deliberation. I don't know that their deliberations sometimes can be very quick and sometimes they can be very long, but I would think they are not going to be very long, but I've been wrong about that before, but they'll definitely have it wrapped up here soon. They have to by statute in order to stay within their guidelines.
Okay. Well, I'd like to segue to yet another topic. I know November is fast receding into the past, but November 30th, the earthquake, I've been able to sit in on an LEPC, an Emergency Preparedness Committee meeting of the borough recently, and there is out a summary report, a look back at how the borough provided service during that time. It's quite a bit of detail, but I think it's safe to say that during the next earthquake, the borough, having reviewed what they've done, will probably do things a bit differently. And one of the questions that had been asked is why an emergency operations center had not been set up. An EOC is typically one thing you do in order to provide a central point of contact and control for services being rendered. I suspect the next one, when it happens, we'll see an EOC and a very different approach to providing information in the short term. And, of course, along with that, we know that Patty Sullivan, who had been a longtime person for being the contact for media at the borough, has moved on. She's taken another job in Anchorage. And her assistant there has taken over and seems to be doing the job. He's still working out how that will happen. Zaz, have you contacted Stefan at all or not yet?
I've dealt with Stefan before. He's very capable.
Right. I'm just wondering about his new role as the point of contact, although they're still working that out in terms of how will EMS deal with that? Will it involve the borough's person or will there be their own person? I think things were learned and we'll see how that plays out.
Haven't. Has Ken Barkley been anointed as permanent or is he still playing the interim role?
No, the plan, as far as I know, is still looking for a permanent director, and Ken is still interim director, but he's at least on daily emergencies for some time now, been the borough contact for DES, you know, and you know, even when Patty was working for the borough, was in general, if it was a car accident or a fire, you wouldn't reach out to the public information people. You'd reach out to Ken Barkley.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about emergencies. I noticed they had the groundbreaking of the new building in the Wasilla area for downtown Wasilla for the police dispatch center, I suppose. Is there a completion date on that? Or
don't know what that is. Hmm. And, well, let's turn to some projects. The one that has been particularly interesting to the people down here in the Palmer area is the Glen Highway MP3442 Projects Collection, which is basically to go eventually from the interchange south of Palmer, through Palmer, and provide a much improved highway system. The construction has begun, and people have noted this in the past. And this week, the Department of Transportation held an event from 4 to 7 p.m. over at the depot. Terry, you were there. Mm-hmm. I went there. What was your takeaway from that?
Well, I think it was just another public event to let anybody that didn't know what was going on ask questions. I mean, the plan is already set. Nobody's going to move any things around at this point. There's a contractor, but I think there was quite a few people there, and I think they were more interested in from what I heard at the tables, or how they were going to divert traffic and how it was really going to kind of disrupt sort of the core of downtown Palmer more than anything. And we certainly have had construction on that road for last year, so we're sort of used to it. But this is getting more towards the core of the community, so I think there's a little more concern on how you really are going to be able to move in and out of downtown.
And, of course, the promise is that you will have no more than a 20-minute delay. And that's one thing that's been said. And also, of course, during August, the end of August, when the Alaska State Fair begins, they're planning to be done with areas that impede traffic because, as we all know, traffic becomes big.
Yeah.
In terms of
I think traffic's going to pick up on the Old Glen Highway and on Bogart as people try to do their best to stay away from it and find other ways in.
So one of the things that we've wondered about, and I think may demonstrate a leap forward, is the use of internet-based apps such as Waze. Many people have been using them. Many people use them now as they head toward Anchorage, but typically not for things happening in Palmer. It's more down the highway, what's happening, I'm heading that way. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to guess that this year, I would encourage people to take a look at apps such as Waze to tell you what's happening in Palmer. because there are a variety of routes one can take now. You go up to Bogard Road, you can go this way, that way, et cetera. And even if you were in the borough building and you're getting ready to leave, or for that matter, if you're coming down to visit in downtown Palmer, coming to some place, you're coming out of Talkeetna, wherever, you may want to look at the Waze app and say, what's happening in this construction zone? Mm-hmm. And that feature is actually, I think, significant improvement over the old days when you knew there was something going to happen, but the only thing you could see was a stopped car in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that.
Yeah.
Last thing dealing with roads, et cetera, here in downtown Palmer, as an extension of the Gil Penalosa walkable, livable communities presentation done sometime, a group of eight people have met, and they're on their way to creating a new form of painted crosswalk. The original, the pilot piece, it looks like right now, will be at that area running from the Palmer Museum to the Friday Fling area. Hmm. It'll be a demo of what can be done. They're in process right now or a number of design suggestions in terms of colors and design. That'll be presented to the committee that meets and deals with trails and parks and so on for the city of Palmer. That'll be on May 2nd, and then that'll be followed by a presentation to the council on May 14th. But both the administration at the city of Palmer and the council have generally looked with favor on this because, in part, there's no cost to the city. And there will be relatively small cost to doing this original. And then who knows? Crosswalks throughout the city and maybe in other places will reflect what has been happening around the country in a number of places, providing both a visual enhancement, a safer recognition that there's a crosswalk yep. there, and all of the rest of that.
Yeah, I think there is some talk about painting all the utility boxes, too, in downtown, which I think would be really fabulous if they've done that, because they've done some great projects outside that makes those big sort of ugly utility boxes that line people's yards and businesses that will look a little more acceptable, or they've come up with some pretty exciting things outside to model off of. So this is a great group. They've really stuck with it. They decided that's what they wanted to do. Timing's good for it. It's always good to do a pop-up demonstrative project. Gets people thinking what can happen. And it's just pretty much the way Palmer is. They see something wants to be done, and they get together, and they do it. So good for them.
Right. Okay. Well, Zaz, any last comments about any other stories you might be working on?
Well, a number of us at different media outlets worked on a story about the Kelsey Green case, the woman who died detoxing in Anchorage jail. In early 2016, her father, her estate, basically won a wrongful death claim, and that was filed last week. You know, the judgment was against Department of Corrections in favor. It was a settlement, although not technically. Both sides agreed. It didn't go to trial. And so as part of that process, we have a long story running today with a kind of a bizarre twist in that former senator, state senator Bill Stoltz, visited Kelsey Green in jail the first day she was there, and they apparently had known each other for some time, according to her mom. So keep an eye out for that.
Okay, wow. We'll look forward to that. Terry, any last comments?
Yeah, they're having. I've have noticed that CNN is doing a special that's going to involve Terry Walters, that has been very involved in the Fallen Up Ministries and about her son, who was also a victim of a drug murder here that is supposed to be running. It's a big problem.
Okay. Well, I want to thank both of you. I want to thank Terry for taking the time to come into the studio. Thank you, Terry.
Enjoy the day.
And I want to thank Zaz for calling in from outside this downtown area.
Anytime.
Okay. We'll be back next week with another edition of Valley Edition.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.